Good morning. So great to see everyone. Blessing to be able to gather to worship our God in spirit and in truth. You know, as we live the Christian life, you know, we go through various times of trials. We go through various afflictions. We go through lots of things that seemingly either cause us to grow in our faith or to shrink back in our faith. We've been studying the book of Deuteronomy and learning that through the wilderness wandering, the Israelites were given the promise that they were going to go to a land filled with milk and honey. And Moses, through the book, shows them, or rather explains to them, the meaning of what God wants, the meaning of what he has commanded, the law. And so as the children of Israel have been traveling, we've seen them go through various times where they've sinned. You know, the people that came out of Egyptian bondage, the older generation, weren't the ones that actually made it into the promised land because of the sin that had been committed, because they did not have faith in God. Last week, we saw that Moses declared that the Israelites, even though God was going to give them this land and they were about to go in, they're days from going in to that land, that they would fail miserably and that they would not be able to keep the law. In that failure, though, God would circumcise their hearts. Because if you remember earlier in our study, Moses told them that they needed to circumcise their hearts so that they could understand. So now we see that God is the one that is doing it, so that they would love him with all their heart and with all their soul. Everything points to restoration. Even though they would fail miserably, even though they would fall flat on their faces, this restoration was going to come, and we learned that it will be initiated when Jesus comes, or when he rather came. So when Jesus came, in his sacrifice, God was cutting the people's hearts. If you remember on the day of Pentecost, when Peter stood up with the rest of the apostles and preached the gospel, the death, the burial, and resurrection of Jesus, it says there, they asked, "What shall we do?" Because they were cut to the heart. The message impacted their life. So Moses must now pass the torch. He's got to give that torch to Joshua, who is going to lead the people into the promised land. So this morning we're going to take a big chunk of scripture, and we're going to look at chapters 31 all the way to the end of the chapter. Now, obviously, we're not going to go verse by verse. I'm sure you've deducted that at this point. We're going to pull out several different points and pieces that I believe are very important for us to learn. These are important things that, you know, when we look at God, when we look at our faith, when we look at how much we are to trust him, all those matter. So in the first eight verses of chapter 31, Moses begins by telling him, by telling Israel that he is 120 years old and that he would not be entering into the promised land, that God had told him that he would not cross over. And in verses 3 through 6, he makes a very specific point to tell them that God is going with them. Although Moses is not going with them, the Moses that brought them, that led them all the way through the wilderness to this point, Moses is not going in. But God will lead them. God, the same God that helped them defeat the kings of the Amorites, the same God that was with them every step of the way. And he says, "Do not fear nor be afraid of them, for the Lord your God, he is the one who goes with you." And he also says, by the way, Joshua is going to take you in. Joshua is going to be the leader. And I want you to be strong and very courageous. The New King James says, be strong and of good courage. Because as you're going into this land, remember the first time they went in, or were going to go in. They were scared to death because they were going into a land that was filled with people. And these people were bigger than they were. They called them giants. These cities were greater than the cities that they had ever seen. They were fortified, and they had thought that they would surely perish. So Moses says, or tells them, God is not going to forsake. But their hope is not to be in Moses. So this is the message. Their hope is to rest completely on the Lord. That he will not leave them. That he will be with them. And so as we look at verses 9 through 29, we see the torch being passed. Moses begins and writes the law, gives it to the priests and the elders, and he commands them that they must stand and read it every 7 years at the Feast of Booths, or the Feast of Tabernacles, depending on what your translation reads. And it says, this is for all people. The word all is a very important part there because it involves men, women, children, the elders. It involves every single person, even the strangers that live amongst them. They were to assemble, they were to listen, and they were to learn for a specific purpose. And that was so that they could fear God and carefully observe all the things that he had commanded them. And so beginning in verse 14, this passing of the torch is very visible. It says, then the Lord said to Moses, behold, the days approach when you must die. Call Joshua and present yourselves in the tabernacle of meeting that I may inaugurate him. So Moses and Joshua went and presented themselves in the tabernacle of meeting. Now the Lord appeared at the tabernacle in a pillar of cloud. And the pillar of cloud stood above the door of the tabernacle. So it was very visible. God was signifying something very special was happening. Because if you know, remember from the past, from previous studies, that when God is present, they flocked to this temple, or rather tabernacle. When God was present, they knew it was time to offer their worship, offer their sacrifices. It was when the Shekinah, or rather his glory, left the temple that they knew while they were living in the tents, in the tabernacles, that they had to move. It was time for them to move. So God appears over the tabernacle in a pillar of fire. Verse 16, he begins some very discouraging words. The Lord says to Moses, behold, you will rest with your fathers, and this people will rise and play the harlot with the gods of the foreigners of the land, where they go to be among them, and they will forsake me and break my covenant, which I have made. The Lord then will be very angry. And great trouble will come upon them. So great that they're going to come to a point where they're going to see all the things that are happening, and they're going to realize that God is not with them. So Moses tells them that God is going into the land that they're going to take, and God is with them. But there's going to be a time where they're going to turn away to serve other gods. So God tells Moses, beginning verse 19, to write these things down. But not just to write, but to teach them a song. Moses was going to write a song, and this song was going to be a witness to the people from God. It's a song of confrontation. If you read the song, and I would very, very much encourage you to do that. You will note that it begins talking about how God is perfect. He is holy. And when they get older, when they go through the adversities that they're about to face because of their disobedience, they're going to wonder why. And they will know because it was taught. So Moses writes the song and teaches the people, verse 22. And then in verse 23, I want to read this. Then he inaugurated Joshua, the son of Nun, and said, "Be strong and of good courage, for you shall bring the children of Israel into the land of which I swore to them, and I will be with you." So let's get the picture of this. So they're standing in the tabernacle. God appears. He's in a cloud, right? Pillar of cloud. All of Israel knows what's happening. And then God tells Moses, "You're going to write this song." And he talks to him about how the Israelites are going to, after they go into the land, they're going to play the harlot. They're going to go after other gods. So basically, they're going to disobey. It's going to happen. And so here in verse 23, he basically turns to Joshua and says, "Good luck. Be strong and of good courage, Joshua, because you're going to be the one that's taking them in." Or at least that's how I envisioned it, or how I read it. So when he was finished, Moses commands that the law be placed beside the Ark of the Covenant as a witness. And in verse 27, he says, "Why? For I know your rebellion and your stiff-necked. If today, while I am yet alive with you, you have been rebellious against the Lord, then how much more after my death? Gather to me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I may speak these words in their hearing and call heaven and earth to witness against them. For I know," verse 29, "that after my death, you will become utterly corrupt and turn aside from the way which I have commanded you. And evil will befall you in the latter days, because you will do evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger through the work of your hands." Moses doesn't sugarcoat it, does he? He comes right out and he tells them that, look at yourselves. If you're stubborn today, and he told them this already, that's the reason why they were to cut their hearts, was so that they wouldn't be stubborn. He says, "You're stubborn today and rebellious today. How much more is it going to be when I'm not here to watch you? So gather everyone. Hear what is being said. Witness what is being said. Because what's about to happen is going to be big." So he goes on, and beginning in verse 30 of chapter 31, all the way through 32, well, almost all the way through 32, with the song of Moses. And so this song was to be remembered. This song was to be taught to generation after generation after generation, so that they would always know why God wasn't with them, because of what had happened. But God, it's not because of who he is, because God is a God of perfection. And he must acknowledge that perfection. Look down at verse 3 of chapter 32. He says, "For I proclaim the name of the Lord. Ascribe greatness to our God. He is the rock. His work is perfect. For all his ways are justice. A God of truth and without injustice. Righteous and upright is he." God is holy. God is just. He is righteous. And then in verses 5 through 18, he talks about all the imperfections of the people. Notice what he says in verse 5. He says, they have corrupted themselves. They are not his children because of their blemish, a perverse and crooked generation. Do you thus deal with the Lord, O foolish and unwise people? Is he not your father who bought you? Has he not made you and established you? Look at all the things that God has done, but you have disqualified yourself. You have corrupted yourself. You have made yourself impure. God's name is great. He is just. He is faithful. God cared for his people, but his people forgot. They forgot God. Through all their prosperity, because as you know, remember, they're going into a land flowing with milk and honey where they, everything was just given to them. It was a land full of richness. They had homes, they had cities, they had crops, they had everything that they needed. He goes on to talk about how that fatness, that prosperity, beginning verse 15, is what led them to forsake God. It's what led them to where they are. Verses 19 through 35, Moses calls for the people to recognize God's justice. Recognize all the things that God has done. Recognize the consequence for their rejection. And yet in verses 26 and 27, he says, I would have said, I will dash them in pieces. I will make the memory of them to cease from among men, had it not feared the wrath of the enemy, lest their adversaries should misunderstand, lest they should say, our hand is high, and is not the Lord who has done all this. He could not be with the people. He could not or would not destroy them for their rejection. He goes on and talks about the problem. The real problem is they have no understanding. Verse 28, for they are a nation void of counsel, nor is there any understanding in them. Oh, that they were wise, that they understood this, that they would consider their latter end. They had no idea. They had no idea what was going on. They lacked the understanding. And they were, as he says in verses 31 through 35, storing up wrath. Just like the days of Sodom, just like the days of Gomorrah. They were storing up wrath. But verse 36 kind of tells us something about God. Tells us about his amazing love. Says, for the Lord will judge his people and have compassion on his servants. When he sees that their power is gone and there is no one remaining, bond or free, he will say, where are their gods? The rock in which they sought refuge, who ate the fat of their sacrifices and drank the wine of the drink offering. Let them rise and help you and be your refuge. God is going to take out all the gods. God is going to have compassion on the people. It's important to understand that God has a way to cut the idols out of our hearts. He has a way to put us, or our lives rather, in distress so that we see the emptiness in trusting other things besides God. And this is something we've all experienced. For instance, you know, when things are going away, maybe you're trying to save for a certain item that you've been wanting. And you start putting the money back and you start saving it. Then all of a sudden something happens and it causes you to have to fork out all that money. And it's gone. So He wants us to not put our hope in those things, to show us that we're wasting our lives, putting our hope in things that are rather things rather than God. He wants to ask us, where are your gods? Where are the ones that you took refuge in? Just to see how our gods do not rise up and help us in the day of our calamity. So the point, verses 39 through 43. There is no one like the Lord. There is no one who... Verse 39, now see that I am He. And there is no God beside me. I kill and I make alive. I wound and I heal. Nor is there any who can deliver from my hand. For I raise my hand to heaven, say, as I live forever, if I whet my glittering sword and my hand takes hold on judgment, I will render vengeance to my enemies and repay those who hate me. I will make my arrows drunk with blood and my sword shall devour flesh with the blood of the slain and the captives from the heads of the leaders of the enemy. Rejoice, O Gentiles, with His people. For He will avenge the blood of His servants and render vengeance to His adversaries. He will provide atonement for the land and His people. There is no one like God in His sovereign ways. So therefore, as we get into the next section, he says, the word of God is important. The commandments of God are important. But verse 47, it says, for it is not a futile thing for you because it is your life. And by this word, you shall prolong your days in the land which you cross over the Jordan to possess. This is the song that Israel was to sing and remember as they went through all the days of their lives, through all the generations, who God is. God is a just God, but He's also a very compassionate God. We get to the very last part of chapter 32, and God told Moses the very same day, verse 49, go up this mountain of the barren, Mount Nebo, which is in the land of Moab across from Jericho. View the land of Canaan, which I give to the children of Israel as a possession, and die on the mountain, which you ascend, and be glad, gathered to your people, just as Aaron your brother died on Mount Hor and was gathered to his people. Verse 51, because you trespassed against me among the children of Israel at the waters of Meribah Kadesh, in the wilderness of Zin, because you did not hallow me in the midst of the children of Israel, yet you shall see the land before you, though you shall not go there, into the land which I am giving to the children of Israel. We see the location and the explanation for Moses' death. Location is up on the mountain. God tells him to go up there, see the land, and then die and be gathered to his people. But the reason for Moses' death is highlighted, isn't it? He says, it's because you trespassed against me among the children. Because you did not honor me. Rather, you did not hallow me. Verse 51. So this is the message. Whenever there are those who fall short of the glory of God, it's because they break faith with the Lord and do not treat Him as holy. So that tells us a very important lesson, and that lesson is that we must remain faithful to the Lord all the days of our life. We have to treat God as holy in order to enter into His eternal promise. In chapters 33 and 34, Moses, in chapter 33 rather, this is the torch passing. He goes through all the tribes of the Israelites and he pronounces a blessing upon them. And he reminds them that there is no one like the Lord. that they are to remember that they are a people who have been saved. Look at verse 29 of, or rather, yeah, 29, yeah, of chapter 33. He says, "Happy are you, O Israel. Who is like you, a people saved by the Lord, the shield of your help and the sword of your majesty? Your enemies shall submit to you, and you shall tread down their high places." So after these blessings of telling them that God was compassionate and that he was going to save, he walks up to Mount Nebo to see the promised land. And as we get into chapter 34, we're going to go to verse 5. "So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord. And he buried him in a valley in the land of Moab opposite Beth Peor. But no one knows his grave to this day. Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eyes were not dim, nor his natural vigor diminished. And the children of Israel wept for Moses in the plains of Moab 30 days. The days of weeping and mourning for Moses ended." So notice the reason that Moses died. It wasn't because he was old. It wasn't because his eyes were dimmed. Means, his sight was leaving him. It wasn't because he didn't have vigor. It wasn't because he didn't have the energy. He died because God says, "It's time, Moses." God knows the time. God designated. Look at verse 10. He says, "But since then, there has not arisen in Israel a prophet like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face, and all the signs and wonders which the Lord sent him to do in the land of Egypt before Pharaoh, before all his servants and in all his land, and by all that mighty power and all the great terror which Moses performed in the sight of all of Israel." He says, there has not arisen a prophet like Moses. No one had been face to face with the Lord like Moses. No one had witnessed or performed all the signs and wonders that God sent him to do. Moses had a direct, intimate relationship with God. And yet, we read the prophecy. Turn back to chapter 18. Deuteronomy chapter 18. Beginning verse 15. "The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your midst, from your brethren. Him you shall hear. According to all you desire to the Lord your God in Horeb in the day of the assembly, saying, 'Let me not hear again the voice of the Lord my God, nor let me see this great fire any more, lest I die.' And the Lord has said to me, 'What they have spoken is good. I will raise up for them a prophet like you from among their brethren, and will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak to them all that I commanded him. And it shall be that whoever will not hear my words, which he speaks in my name, I will require it of him.'" There's no other prophet that's risen, but there will be one. Moses says, rather God says. So Deuteronomy, it closes by telling the Israelites, by telling us to watch, to look for a new Moses, but not just look for a new Moses, but look for specifics. Do you remember in John chapter 1? We're going to go to the New Testament as we close. John chapter 1, beginning verse 14. "And the Word became flesh and dwelt amongst us. And we beheld his glory, the glory of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. John bore witness of him and cried out, saying, 'This was he of whom I said, he who comes after me is preferred before me, for he was before me.' And of his fullness we have all received, and grace for grace. Verse 17, for the law was given through Moses, but grace and truth were realized through Jesus Christ. No one has seen God at any time. The only begotten God who is in the bosom of the Father, he has declared him. John explains that Jesus is that one who sent, the one who God sent. In chapter 9 of John, John explains all the miracles performed that have ever been performed, and rather, no one has ever given sight to the blind. Jesus performed signs and wonders. He did all the things that God had sent him to do. There was no one like him. I'm reminded of what Matthew chapter 17, when they went up to the Mount of Transfiguration. And Jesus saw, or rather the apostles that were with him, saw Jesus there talking to Moses and Elijah. Moses representing the law, Elijah representing the prophets. And through all that, they hear this voice, the voice of God from heaven that says, this is my beloved Son in whom I'm well pleased. Hear him. Just like in Deuteronomy chapter 18, just like in Deuteronomy chapter 34, that new prophet, that new person that's going to be sent to do the will of God, you need to listen to him. You need to hear him. So we are to see the glory of Moses through that lens and see an even greater glory of Jesus. In the parable of talents in Matthew 25, you remember that Jesus gave or talked about giving several measures of talents to three of the servants. And he says that when the master came to settle the accounts before each of the servant, they gave an account to the master of what they had done. And of course, the first two went out and doubled because they immediately acted. And then the last one, who had only one, says, I was afraid of you that you were a harsh man, and so I hid it under a ground. I dug a hole and I put it in it. Listen to the honor given to those who were faithful. Matthew 25, verse 21. He says, well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Our God sent his Son to cut our hearts. That through his love, through all that he has done, that we might obey him. That we might trust him for all that he's done. And Jesus has made it possible for us to receive the same honor that Moses received. Because Moses, there at the close of chapter 34, says that he was known as the servant of God. We can have that same honor, but we must be faithful to the Lord. If you're here this morning, you've not given your life to him. You've not been cut to the heart by the gospel, the death, the burial, and resurrection of Jesus. Had that circumcision that allows God to go in there and work through all the heart problems. Give your life to him. Follow him with all your heart, soul, and might. We must not put our hope in all the things of the world, the idols, the false gods. Because they can't help us. They can't save us. We have to put our hope, put our faith, put our trust, and depend in God. So let him be the guiding hope in your life. Let him, as he said, I'm going to take you to a land flowing with milk and honey, a promised land. That's the promise to us. So as we've seen in this study, through the last few months, that we are being prepared to enter glory. So we all have to answer the question, are we ready? If you're not Now's the time to come while we stand and sing the song of invitation.